I'm Tom Martin, and this is Eastern Standard, a broadcast service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced with the support of 1, the All-Tech Ideas Conference, and Dynamics Productions. This is a special week here at Eastern Standard and WEKU. It's the week when you have an opportunity to hop aboard and come along for a ride on this public radio freight train. More on why I call it that in just a moment when we're joined by WEKU General Manager Mike Savage. But first, we'd like to offer you something. We'd like to offer you an opportunity to sit in on a production of Eastern Standard. Come see how the many, many moving parts of this show come together every week to produce a fresh, unique hour focused on the life and times of the people of Central and Eastern Kentucky. If you're interested, be one of 5 current sustainers who increase their monthly gift by $25 a month and or a new member pledging $25 a month or higher, and we'll put your name on a pair of reserved seats in the studio for a future Eastern Standard production session. You're going to be surprised to find out how this whole thing works. Our executive producer and WEKU GM Mike Savage is right here to bring us up to date on all of the things that have been happening at the station. And Mike, when we last heard from you, you had just arrived. That was then. This is now. A lot of time has gone by. And there have been a lot of good things happening in the meantime. And first, about that freight train analogy I mentioned. What's going on there?
Well, the good news, Tom, is WEKU is at full power for the first time in 4 years. And that's significant for the station and the community, because the community has put up with the station being at low power for so long. Lightning struck our WEKH hazard transmitter 4 years ago, took that off the air. We were able to get that replaced. And then WEKU, our main signal at 88.9 FM, the transmitter there failed. And that transmitter had to kind of limp along on low power. So listeners in Frankfort and Richmond and Lexington were getting 5% of the power of the station. Instead of 50,000 watts, it was broadcasting at about 2,500 watts. So it was a much smaller coverage area. And that was frustrating for management, for the university, for listeners. But the good news is, you know, starting in March, we're full power everywhere. We're full power at 88.9 FM, full power at WEKH and Hazard. Of course, we got that transmitter replaced a couple of years ago. And it's just nice to be back at full power. And I'm sure listeners appreciate that as well.
You know, you mentioned our other towers, our other transmitters, and I'm not sure that all of our listeners realize that WEKU is actually much more than just one single radio station. I think nine altogether?
Nine stations.
Tell us a little bit more about that kind of network that we have.
Well, there are 4 full power stations. They are located, one is here in between Richmond and Lexington. One is located in Hazard. Another full power station located in Corbin. And then another full power station located in Pineville in eastern Kentucky. And then we've got five smaller stations kind of sprinkled throughout central and eastern Kentucky to essentially cover most of central and most of eastern Kentucky and then some of the adjoining states. And if listeners are curious about the coverage area, they want to see it, they can go to our website, weku.fm, click on the About tab, and you can see the new map that's been updated that shows our full coverage area.
Now, one of the things that you've done since you arrived here that was really exciting for me, and I know for the whole staff, and I hope for our listeners as well, is that you've added to that menu of listening options an app.
That's right. That's a digital app. And what we're finding out is more and more listeners are tuning into the broadcast away from radios. And some people may not believe that, but that's where the trend is going. And people are listening on their phones. They're listening on their iPads. They're listening on home systems that can listen on the internet. They've got Alexa speakers, smart speakers. They're listening in other ways. But the app is something that we invested in so that people could download it to their phone or tablet And it could be sort of this one-stop shop for listening. It's really technologically advanced, Tom. It's got a sleep timer on it. So it's like an alarm clock. You could wake up to WEKU. You could fall asleep to the station. You can make a donation from that page. You can also look at all the news that's created from the news staff and scroll over and see pictures and read stories. It's somewhat intuitive, and we believe it's the future of broadcasting, going beyond just people listening to the content, but engaging listeners more, giving them more things to read, more things to share, for example, in social media on Facebook or other social media channels. So our goal is to engage with our listeners more and provide more local content. And the app, it's free. It can be downloaded for Apple iPhones, for Android devices too. And you just go to Google Play or the Apple App Store and you download it and start using it.
Speaking of goals, I'd like to touch on a couple of others that have come up in our weekly staff meetings that you've mentioned. And one of them is a renewed commitment to telling the story of Eastern Kentucky.
I think that's very important because, we're part of Eastern Kentucky University, and the mission of the university is really to serve the eastern part of the state. Eastern Kentucky University happens to be based in central Kentucky, but the mission is to really serve the eastern part of the state. We want to dovetail that mission and increase the content and engage more with Eastern Kentucky in the Appalachian region there, because we feel there are so many good stories to tell and nobody's doing it. And we think there's an opportunity for us to step in and lead the way. You know, don't get me wrong, Central Kentucky, Lexington is important. But we think there's just a big opportunity to tell these stories similar to what you hear on this program in the many interviews that you do, Tom, and in the news stories that Stu Johnson and others at the station do. So there's just a big opportunity for us to step up. And that's sort of our strategic direction, is to do more of that.
And another goal that's kind of in service to that is the hope to add more reporters and produce more local content important to Kentucky, like this program, for example.
Most stations are shrinking. They're not growing. And it's even though it's a good economic time, generally speaking, in the country, radio stations are not adding staff. They're essentially doing more with less. Our goal, we want to add staff and create more content. It'd be great to have 4, 5, 6 reporters and then dedicate some of those reporters to specific beats like arts and culture, or have a reporter dedicated to Appalachia. Right now, Mary Meehan is dedicated to health reporting, and the Ohio Valley Resource is something that we bought into as a partnership with other stations to bring content that's important to listeners in Eastern and Central Kentucky, such as the opioid crisis, education, health issues that are important. So we have an ambitious plan to sort of super serve our community, Central and Eastern Kentucky, and we're just getting that started.
This program, Eastern Standard, is kind of an experiment. It's evolved over the past year. We've been tweaking the format to bring it around to more of a magazine approach. I can tell you from personal experience, it takes an awful lot of resources and a lot of time to pull this together. I'm close to the forest here, so it's probably not my place to talk about it. But I wonder if you could explain to our listeners what does go on in putting together a program like this.
When I first started learning about radio, we were cutting tape back then. We didn't have digital audio. And the conversion rate for how much time you spent on the story was 1 hour for every broadcast minute. So you can just imagine the amount of time that was put in. It's not quite that much today, but I will tell you that the amount of time that goes into this program is hours and hours and hours every week. And, Tom works very hard on this show and everybody who puts it together. And just to be frank, most public radio stations don't do an hour-long magazine because of the amount of time, money, and energy and resources it takes. They just don't do it. And it's something that's very special and unique to this community. So we're committed to continuing this broadcast, continuing Eastern Standard. But our goal is to make it better. Our goal is to connect more with listeners, get ideas, include listeners in the conversation, and continue to put forth a program that people talk about on a regular basis that helps them understand issues that are important to them.
And I also want to give a shout out to my partner in crime and putting the show together, Neil Kesterson, who is our audio editor and my ears. He catches things as we go along, and he's responsible for putting together the great music that you hear during the breaks and so forth. So a big shout out to Neil. We also have a lot of content partners involved in this program that come to the table and bring us the information that you hear, like the Ohio Valley Resources you mentioned, Kentucky Humanities, the Kentucky Historical Society just stepped up, the EKU Chautauqua Lecture Series, the Transylvania University Creative Intelligence Lecture Series and their speakers, the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, the Lexington Herald Leader and their reporters, the Richmond Register and Undermain talking about the arts and culture in the region. And we're developing new relationships with many of the nonprofit organizations that are working very hard to bring new prosperity to Appalachian Kentucky. And you're going to hear a lot of that reflected in programs going forward. Mike, maybe you can talk to us for just a minute about why it's important for listeners to help us move in that direction.
Tom, I think it's about participation and listening to this content, sharing it. Educating yourself, it's not enough. Participating by being a funder, making a contribution to WEKU so we can invest in Eastern Standard, make this better, increase the content, do more, hire more reporters. It takes a lot to produce a program like this. So listeners can take an active role. Anybody can just listen to a show, but stepping up and saying that you support Eastern Standard, you support stations like WEKU makes a big difference. It allows us to do more.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the many hours that it takes to put together a program like this, and it's as much about being part of it. I think people, me included, like to belong to something. We like to feel that we're contributing to something, and I know that Neil and I do, certainly, in putting together this program.
I think it's it goes to Tom being connected to the community, and public radio does such a great job of that. This show takes it to a whole new level. The time and energy and resources that are put in to really dig deep and go beyond sort of the topical water cooler discussions that you may hear and dive deep into a subject that is important that you're not going to find perhaps in the newspaper, you're not going to find on a commercial radio or TV station. That's what makes public radio and Eastern Standard special. So I'm proud to be associated with this program.
Well, we'll have a little bit more of Eastern Standard coming up. And if you'd like to get a better idea of what this program is all about, you can go to our website, esweku.com. And all of our programs are there. And there are some other goodies there, too, that you might want to take a look at. Mike Savage, he wears two hats as general manager of WEKU and executive producer of Eastern Standard. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you, Tom.
Coming up after the break, Kentucky's Open Records Law and the Freedom of Information Act. Some insights from Kentucky Journalism Hall of Famer Al Cross.
Every citizen ought to be aware that they have a law at the state level and a law at the federal level that lets them have access to records that will reveal things that they wouldn't have had any idea they could have access to.
And later in the hour, we'll fill you in on what they'll be talking about at the 32nd Annual East Kentucky Leadership Conference in Benham and Cumberland. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Eastern Standard is made possible by One, the Alltech Ideas Conference, a global nexus of innovation for the future of food and the farm. Attendees are future thinkers who view technology as a transformative opportunity for their businesses and lives. They share a belief in the boundless power of just one idea to change everything. The 35th Annual Conference, 119, is May 19th through 21st, 2019, in Lexington. Learn more at one.alltech.com.
Major support for Eastern Standard on WEKU is provided by the law firm Hicks & Funson. Kentucky lawyers Josh Hicks, Greg Funson, and Shannon Church provide legal advice and representation in the areas of personal injury, catastrophic accident, and immigration law. Learn more at hfkylawyers.com. Now, back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
Journalism has always had its challenges, but maybe in some important ways never quite as tough as those confronting reporters and editors in today's world. Accessing information, even the kind that is on the public record, can be turned into an exhausting test of determination. Well, Al Cross knows all about this. Al was for 26 years a reporter at the Courier-Journal, more than half of that time as the paper's chief political writer. He still writes a political column about twice a month. He is a KET political commentator and is director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues. Al is also a full extension professor of journalism and media. And in 2010, he was inducted into the Kentucky Journalism Hall of Fame. So, Al knows his way around this news business. So I invited him to talk to us about one particular aspect of it, getting information from government, information and data that officials sometimes or often don't want to turn over to reporters. Thanks for joining us, Al.
Glad to be here, Tom.
How would you describe or characterize the challenges reporters are facing today as they work to piece together and verify government information?
Well, they face increasing challenges from the people who are appointed and the people who are elected to spend our money and enforce our laws. You have legislatures and legislators individually who want to restrict access to information. And you have appointed officials who turn down records requests. And increasingly, I fear that these requests are not maintained or the denial is not appealed because the news organization just doesn't have the resources to spend the time on it. You can appeal to the Attorney General's office for free. But if agency refuses to go along with the Attorney General's opinion, then you get sued and you've got to hire a lawyer. So I think fewer and fewer news organizations are willing to spend substantial sums on legal fees because their business model has been so upset.
Now, I hasten to add here that I don't want to tar all government officials with the same brush, but there may be a few that do not want information out there for one reason or another, often political.
The nature of government is simply to be secret. You know, it's at the far end of the extreme are public officials who see public office as a private possession. We still have a lot of those in this state, particularly at the local level and, sad to say, in Appalachian, Kentucky, where I'm from. At the far end of the spectrum are officials who believe in complete transparency and will show you just about any record. Those are people who operate, I think, with a completely clear conscience.
So one really important tool that came about, I believe, at about the turn of the century, about year 2000, that everybody has at their at their disposal, but reporters and editors in particular, is the Freedom of Information Act. What information is available through what we call FOIA?
Well, there are two laws that people need to be aware of. The Freedom of Information Act, which was actually passed in 1966 and revised a number of times since then, applies to federal information. I think most of the information that people in Kentucky are interested in would be covered by the state open records law, which applies to state and local information. And it covers just about everything with certain exceptions.
Well, let's drill down then into the Kentucky open records law. What rights are conferred on people under that law? And this is for anybody, any citizen, correct?
Any citizen. You know, people most often hear about open records and open meetings laws and news stories, which may give them the idea that the laws are used mainly by journalists. In fact, regular citizens are the main users of open records laws. Increasingly, we have people essentially doing journalism as citizens by getting records and writing about them on a blog or a website or social media. I like to say that every American has the First Amendment right to commit journalism. And I use that verb because if you say you're doing journalism, there's a certain responsibility that you have to exercise. You have to, you know, be independent and practice a discipline of verification and let the truth be your master. But I think that every citizen ought to be aware that they have a law at the state level and a law at the federal level that lets them have access to records that will reveal things that they wouldn't have had any idea they could have access to.
Do you think this has had the effect of opening the floodgates and perhaps in some instances at least government officials have been overwhelmed?
No, not really. I think the overwhelming of government officials can occur when a group or individual goes on a fishing expedition and says, I want all the records of expenditures by your government for the fiscal year just passed. That is a voluminous set of records, and they are supposed to turn them over. If they keep them in electronic form, it should be easy enough to turn over without a lot of trouble. That's really a key in using these records is asking for them in the right format, so that you don't place an undue burden on the custodian of the records.
Have you used the Freedom of Information Act or Open Records Law in your work as a journalist?
Oh, sure. It's just standard practice. In most cases, the work I did, you could go to an agency and say, I want to see this and so, and you didn't even have to fill out an open records request because they kept those records for public access. You know, campaign finance stuff when I was a political writer, for example. Most other agencies will require you to fill out an open records request. Most of them have something on their website that will tell you how to do that and who the custodian of their records are, who that request ought to be addressed to, and so on.
What is exempt from this law? I think there are some 9 exemptions, something like that.
There are exemptions for trade secrets. That's a current issue with Brady Industries that wants to put the aluminum mill in northeastern Kentucky. There are exemptions for preliminary recommendations and drafts. There's a law and a bill in the legislature that would expand that somewhat. There are exemptions for certain personnel records, and there's a general exemption saying information where there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. And that applies to things like people's specific residence addresses, their phone numbers, their social security numbers, and so on.
There might be an argument in the case of Brady Industries that we have here a private sector entity that wants to protect its proprietary information, yet they are relying on tax incentives to launch their project.
And not just tax incentives. You know, there's a request pending in the courts now for a list of the shareholders of Brady Industries. Did you know that you, the listener, are in effect a shareholder in Brady Industries? Because the Commonwealth of Kentucky, through the legislature, put $15 million into this aluminum plant project that has yet to truly break ground.
So a straightforward investment in it.
Exactly. And that was the first time the state had ever done something like that. So there are legitimate questions about who we're in business with. That's what it boils down to. Every taxpayer in this Commonwealth is in business with Brady Industries. I want to know who else I'm in business with.
I was going to ask you, why should a person who's listening to this want a journalist like you, Al, to have this kind of tool at their at your disposal? What kind of difference could it make in their life? Say that person who had no idea that they were a quote-unquote shareholder in Brady Industries.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it can get pretty personal and go to your personal health. Right now, this state is in the middle of the largest hepatitis outbreak in history, the largest outbreak of any state. It's been going on for a year and a half. And the Courier-Journal obtained emails that showed that state health officials disregarded advice from their main infectious disease expert to mount a stronger effort against this outbreak. And the officials pushed back by saying, well, you didn't report the nice things that the people at the local level had to say about us. Well, perhaps not, but the story was about the statewide response. They did provide some money to local health departments, which I'm sure were appreciative, but the infectious disease director had recommended a much greater investment, and he was fired.
In this day and age, are we seeing a blurring of the lines between PR, public relations, and straightforward professional journalism?
Well, sure. I like to explain it this way to folks. We've had a blurring of the line between opinion and fact, between information and entertainment, and so on. There's just a lot of blur out there, and I think it helps sort these things out if people will think of information media as three different types. First is the news media, which practice journalism, which requires a discipline of verification. We tell you how we know something, or we quote someone. We don't just stand for it ourselves. Sometimes we use anonymous sources when we have to, but that is not all that frequent. Then you have social media, which practice no discipline of verification and are more about opinion than about fact. And then the third type of media to which you alluded is strategic media. I should say are strategic media. Media is a plural word, and all the much more so in the media proliferation environment we have now. Strategic media are advertising, public relations, and direct marketing. And they use the other two types of media to sell you something, a service, a good, a cause, an idea, a politician, whatever. And sometimes they will masquerade as news media. You know, if a newspaper runs a press release without saying it came from the sponsoring organization, then they are facilitating the misuse of the news media by strategic media.
It's more challenging than ever to be a consumer of information, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you think of it in those terms, you know, if you think there are three separate types of information media, every time you see a piece of information, you can ask yourself, what type of source is this? Is this news? Is it social media, which is unverified? Or is it strategic media, somebody trying to sell me something?
Kentucky columnist, journalism educator, and Journalism Hall of Famer, Al Cross. Thanks so much, Al.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And you can learn more about the Freedom of Information Act online at foia.gov. Coming up after the break, at this year's annual East Kentucky Leadership Conference, this much is a given.
We know in Eastern Kentucky that the people that live here is our greatest resource.
Organizer Carolyn Sunday says it's all about sitting down and holding an open and honest conversation about what it's going to take to lift Appalachian Kentucky. The conference, in its 32nd year, is set for April 25th and 26th in Benham and Cumberland, Kentucky, and we'll have details. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Eastern Standard is made possible by One, the All-Tech Ideas Conference. One is an incubator of innovation, a forum for future thinkers, and a platform for propelling forward the promise of a planet of plenty. Attendees view technology as a transformative opportunity for their businesses and lives in order to make a difference in the world. Learn more about 119 in Lexington, May 19th through the 21st, 2019, at one.alltech.com.
Major support for Eastern Standard on WEKU is provided by the law firm Hicks & Funson. Kentucky lawyers Josh Hicks, Greg Funson, and Shannon Church provide legal advice and representation in the areas of personal injury, catastrophic accident, and immigration law. Learn more at hfkylawyers.com. Now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
The East Kentucky Leadership Foundation is getting ready to hold its 32nd annual conference in Benjamin, Cumberland. And here with details is board member and Harlan County native Carolyn Sunday. Carolyn is vice president of diversity, inclusion, and special programs, as well as a professor at Southeast Kentucky Community and Technical College. And we thank you for joining us, Carolyn.
Yes.
And I see that the theme this year is getting ahead of the curve, growing a 21st century economy. What's that about? What's on the agenda?
Well, the agenda is set really just for us to get together and sit and have a real open dialogue with people from all over Eastern Kentucky and hopefully invited guests to come in and talk to us. Although we know in Eastern Kentucky that the people that live here is our greatest resource, and that we know that if we can find jobs to keep them here, that would work for us, because trying to get people to move into the areas is a whole different thing, just because of the economy and lack of employment. So one of the things that this conference is going to do is not just say, let's just sort of plan for now, but let's just look on into the future of what we need here and how we can best get people involved growing jobs, growing the economy, so that we can be sustainable here in the future in Eastern Kentucky. And I myself, proud of being from Eastern Kentucky, want to see it thrive, want to see the young people, the college graduates, I want them to return to this area, and so that we will be, you know, in the future, we will be able to sustain and hold jobs and plan more for the future.
Okay. And looking at the program here, I see that there is a session on, this is interesting, capitalizing on the economic benefits of lakes in the region. Any idea what that's going to be about?
Well, that's really going to be about that we don't use the potential of our lakes. And I know that even like all people, when you're looking at programs on TV, they're always talking about lakes and buying waterfront and going out and, you know, fishing. And we don't capitalize on that here as much. And we have beautiful lakes in Eastern Kentucky, and we have beautiful parks. But as people begin to travel out sometime to other parks and other areas, we don't see why we can't make it more appealing here. So that's going to be a big discussion on how we can best use our lakes, how we can attract tourists to our lakes here in Eastern Kentucky.
And another one I see is overcoming barriers for a 21st century workforce. What would some of those barriers be?
Well, one of the things is for that one, and that's going to be an intensive session, and it's going to be with a panel of speakers, and it's going to, and overcoming barriers, of course, one of our barriers is the education process. One of them is in healthcare, of course, is a shortage of nurses. So we're trying to see how best we can approach trying to get more nurses educated and get them into the system and keep them occupied here in Eastern Kentucky, but also, you know, get them so they can have jobs, because that's going to be, it's a real shortage of nurses. So that's one of those. Education is a key. And the other one, of course, is going into digital careers and other careers that we know are going to be future jobs. And it's a shortage of those jobs in America. And, of course, a lot of those jobs would benefit our young families here, because parents can actually stay at home with their young children and not have to have daycare and other bills. So it should make it affordable for them to do that also. So it's healthcare and education and private entrepreneurship, trying to get people to look at that, which would be one of the first times that we probably put emphasis on those kind of things, because most people don't think about it. But we have communities that are thriving here now, like Pineville and other places that have gone into putting emphasis on entrepreneurship here in Eastern Kentucky.
Is there a keynote speaker lined up?
The keynote speaker have not been confirmed. We do know, however, at the luncheon, we're going to have a gubernatorial candidate forum. So this is going to give everybody the opportunity to come and share what they have plans, not only for the state of Kentucky, but how they can help us here in Eastern Kentucky to be self-sustainable and help us with education and also bringing jobs and employment to Eastern Kentucky.
Okay, and this is a two-day conference. I think it's April 25th and 26th. Is that correct?
Yes, starting on Thursday at the Benham Schoolhouse Inn. And at that, we're going to have two sessions. One is going to be by the East Kentucky Women in Leadership, which is always a great session. And the other session will be What's Next in East Kentucky. And that's going to be a group of students that's going to come in, and they're going to show us some of the things they've been doing with technology. Since, again, we're getting down into grade school doing STEM programs, and so that's going to be a part of one of the, that workshop. They're going to have students talk about STEM program.
And if somebody's listening to us and they want to come, and they want to come down and spend a couple of days, where would they spend the night?
Well, we have rooms available at the Benham Schoolhouse Inn, and that number is in the brochure. You can go to our website, and it will give you that information. You can go out to ekll.org website, and you will find we also have rooms at the Quality Inn in Harlan, Kentucky, and it's about 20 miles from us. The Benham Inn is a historical hotel, and it's been on HGTV, and it's very nice and very quaint. I suggest that if you're going to come, please come on and make your room reservations.
And how about registration? Is it open to everybody, and can that be done on your website as well?
Yes, registration can be done one of two ways. It can be done on the website, and it also by Eventbrite. You can pay there by the credit card, or you can send in registration by a check and make it payable to Southeast Community and Technical College and just send it along with the registration form and information that you can get off the obtain off the website.
That's Carolyn Sundy. She's a member of the board of the East Kentucky Leadership Foundation. Thanks, Carolyn.
All right. Thank you.
We have a special note for you. On Saturday, April 6th, you can join a battlefield or historic site cleanup in Kentucky. It's Park Day 2019. Volunteers across Kentucky and the country join forces with the American Battlefield Trust to help local parks and historic sites tackle maintenance projects, both large and small, from raking leaves and hauling trash to painting signs and building trails. It's a fun and meaningful way to lend a hand, and in many cases, you can see the land that you have helped save at your local battlefield sites. For information, go to battlefields.org and look for Park Day under the Events tab. That wraps up this week's edition. Back next week with Jerry Roll of the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky, Laura Smith of the Appalachian Impact Fund, arts editor Art Shackett with details on the Railbird Fest coming to Keeneland, and reporter James Bruggers on attempts to weaken anti-pollution protections along the Ohio River. Eastern Standard is a broadcast service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced in the Lexington studios of Dynamics Productions, with the support of ONE, the All-Tech Ideas Conference, a global nexus of innovation for the future of food and the farm. Our executive producer is Mike Savage. Neil Kesterson is our producing engineer and audio editor. You can listen to editions of Eastern Standard on the WEKU mobile app, available for Apple and Android devices. And we'd like to hear from you. You can email us at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.